Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So hello and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the latest of our isolation busting podcast coming to you, well, not live, but from my spare bedroom. So there you go. I hope you're all well. Joining myself, Louis Mendes here on this week's podcast via telephone, of course. We've got, well, who have we got first? Benji Cloak, how you doing, Ben?
Yes, all good. Thank you, Louis.
Yeah, having a good isolation?
Not bad, yeah, not bad. Slowly getting there with everything, but yeah, not bad. Enjoying it so far.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Yeah, it's a weird situation to be in, isn't it? But once you just stay at home, I'm sure you can make your own fun. Who else have we got? We've got Tom Wallin on the phone. How you doing, Tom?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, mate.
Yeah, how are you finding it? How's your other half working with the NHS, of course? So she's a bit of a hero, and you're just a bit of a loser sat at home, aren't you?
Pretty much, yeah, it's an experience, I'll tell you that, but we're doing all right, thank you.
Yeah, how's the cat?
He's absolutely fine, no idea what's going on, so he's just pleased to have company all day.
He looks haunted in some of the photos I've seen, but we won't go too far into that, and also joining us on the phone is, of course, Mr. Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, hello boys, how are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. It's good to have you all on the phone then for this week's pod. We're doing something slightly different this week. There hasn't been too much really to talk about in terms of current affairs at the club. I saw there were some fake season ticket prices going around for a few hours, but the club are saying they aren't the season ticket prices that people are going to actually have to pay later on, so I wouldn't pay too much attention to that just yet. But as has sort of become the tradition now for these Saturdays, the club are doing their own little thing. They're putting on DVDs that you can watch for free on the club website to sort of take a walk down memory lane. And this week they put on a really good one. It's the Pride and Premiership DVD. So this was bought out just after we got relegated from the Premier League back in 2007. And they ranked the top 20 games that we'd ever had in the Premier League. You know, the 4-2 win at Highbury, the 3-2 win with Kevin Lisby's hat-trick against Liverpool at the Valley, those sort of games. Now, obviously, last week we sort of went through and did a run-through of the 2011-12 season because that's what they did. Now, obviously, we thought we could do the same thing that they've done this week on the club website. But we thought, now, this week we're going to put our own little spin on it. So we're doing our own Pride and Premiership style thing. We're thinking of our favourite games in the Premier League era, but I gave the guys a little caveat. They can only pick games which aren't on that DVD. So you can't go for the obvious games, the wins against Liverpool and the big wins, you know, or the 3-3 draw with Man United, for example. So I've asked the boys and myself to pick games that were special to us within the Premier League era. Now, of course, there's some great wins in there, and there's some games you may not have remembered because, of course, they're not in the standard top 20. There's also some heavy defeats in there or some losses, which I guess is quite unusual. So what we're going to do is we're going to run through. We've all picked three games each. Hopefully we'll get about an hour's worth of stuff out of this. So we'll talk about some of our favourite memories of the Premier League era, but perhaps some of them a little bit left field. Some of them you'll remember fondly as well, though, and I think, first of all, we're going to dive straight into a game that Tom Wallin picked. So, Tom, get ready to come in. We're going to go back to the 5th of December, a special date, of course, for Charlton fans, because that was the day we returned to the Valley in 1992. But in 2006, Charlton's run of good luck on that specific date continued when Blackburn visited the Valley.
This is surely the last chance of the game. The 2 minutes of stoppage time have elapsed. It's El Karkouri, he's in!
Brad Friedel favours that side, his goal makes no attempt for it whatsoever. It's a well-struck shot with Karkouri, but it doesn't exactly go into the corner of the net. Les Reed's reaction.
There we go, as Talal El Khoury's last-minute winner against Blackburn Rovers in what would turn out to be Charlton's relegation season. But Tom, it was your choice. I'll bring you back in. Tom, why don't you explain why that game in particular stood out to you?
Yeah, a number of reasons, really. Like I've said to you guys before, obviously, I didn't come down to that many games a season when I wasn't living around this area. Used to come down with my granddad, and that was one of the games we got to that season. Obviously, not a great season, but came down, and obviously being 0-0 and with us struggling and Les Reed yet to get a win, it was obviously a very difficult time for the club as a whole. But we used to come down, you know, in pretty positive spirits, and El Khoury was probably my favourite player at the time. He was a bit of a maverick, you know. He scored that, obviously, that wonder goal against Arsenal. He was a bit of a crazy guy. He scored one, I think, from the halfway line, didn't he? Maybe that same season against Sheffield. So he was just a great player to watch. And I remember him getting that free kick, and it was about 94, 95 minutes in. And everyone around where we were sitting, every single person was saying, not him, don't let him take it. It's going to go into the back of the covered end. Please don't let him take it. And then you could just see that little gap round the wall, and he found it. And to that point, I had never seen the Valley rock like that before. Mm. It was just an incredible, incredible atmosphere. And it was just one of them little moments in that season. There were a couple of them I remember where you just thought maybe we would be able to turn it around. Mm. And obviously, we know how that season then panned out, and we'll come on to a couple of other games in that season a bit later on. But it was just a really special moment for me personally to be there with my granddad, who isn't able to come as much these days, and just one that I'll really treasure, because it was kind of our favourite player scoring such of what we thought at the time would be such a crucial goal in a big season. Yeah. And to do it against what everybody around us was saying was just unbelievable.
Yeah, you mentioned it was Les Reed's, I think it was his only win, wasn't he, in his
yeah.
sort of short tenure as Charlton manager. Now, I've got my own weird personal story about this. I mean, I did have a season ticket back then, of course, but this was on a Tuesday night, and I used to work nights at Sainsbury's on Tuesday nights, so I couldn't go to this game. And I remember sat there in the canteen, sort of just before my shift started, waiting for the final score to rock up on teletext. And then someone texted me saying, oh, it's finished 0-0. And I assumed they must have got that information from somewhere. So I went down to start my shift and spent the first 3 hours of my shift assuming that we'd drawn 0-0. Before going up to read the match report on teletext about 1 o'clock in the morning and finding out that we'd actually won the game, and obviously being in a bit of shock, there was Talal El Khoury. I mean, Ben, you remember Talal as a player. He wasn't, I think maverick's probably a fair way to describe him.
Yeah, I think he was a bit of a nutter, wasn't he? Yeah. He didn't shy away from shooting outside the box at all. As a centre back, I'm sure Curbs was pulling his hair out sometimes, going, no, don't do that. But my own memory from that game was quite a memorable one as well, to be fair, because I live in Twickenham, and my dad always was like, quick, we've got to get the last train home, we've been rubbish, 0-0, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nope, I'm staying, we could do this. And then when that free kick popped up, and as Tom said, he just side-footed it rather than pelting it normally, what he normally did, into the corner. I was so pleased to get down to Charlton Station after that, and my dad was still there. He'd missed the train he was hoping to get on, and I was like, "You missed it."
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that one.
I'm sure it was Talal El Khoury once as well, going back to how much of a maverick he was. Who I think we were playing Norwich at home, and I think we won 4-0. There's absolutely no needle in the game, and bizarrely, like the ball, we were defending the Jimmy Seed stand end of the ground, and the ball just fell to him inside the penalty box, and he had as much time as he wanted to turn around and clear it up the park, but for some reason he just booted it as hard as he could into the first row of Norwich fans. It was absolutely bizarre, but like we say, a bit of a maverick, and that was one of his more special moments at the Valley. Now look, let's move on now to Nathan's first choice. This is another happy occasion at the Valley. We go back to November 2003, and the visitors for a London derby were Fulham.
Nice control. Fed through for Jonathan Johansson. Van der Sar pushed it away to Stewart. Set up by Jensen and then Johansson. Van der Sar could only parry. and despite losing his balance, Graham Stewart did very well to recover and to score. Headed cross this time. Yule. Johansson! It looks like it's going to be Charlton's day. Melville left it short. Oh, and Johansson scored again. It's a calamitous piece of defending. And Jonathan Johansson, having gone nearly 8 months without a goal, has now scored twice in the space of 6 minutes. Legwinski! Both posts. Sean Davis scores on his return.
There we go, a 3-1 win over Fulham at the Valley. Nathan, why don't you tell us why you picked that game?
I think Tom said there were so many games that we could have picked up apart from the top 20. But at the time, it was still, I know it was only November, but I think we were in a bit of run of form. I think we had 4 wins and a draw in last. Well, I think we were in the Champions League places, and I think Fulham were just outside it. And I think at the time, Fulham had a really good squad, and they were managed by Chris Coleman at the time. And it's difficult because obviously I grew up in the Premier League years at secondary school, so I can remember quite a lot. But in terms of obviously the younger fans that probably haven't seen it, there'll be a lot of players that they probably didn't realise how good they were. And I mean, they had people like Van der Sar was in goal, we had Mel Bronk, you had Bar Morton and Louis Sahar up front, who were absolutely frightening. And I think it was just, I remember that. Just a game where, even though we were in a good run of form, I still was quite, what's the word am I looking for? I didn't expect us to beat everyone every week. I knew it would end soon. But I think the whole performance from JJ as well, one of my favourite players in the time. I think 2 weeks before, Fulham beat Man United at Old Trafford. And for the younger fans, Man United were good back then.
Back in the old days.
they were very good, and I'm sure they know. But it was just, I think, an all-round performance. And I think the thing that epitomised a Charlton team was back in the day was we might not have been blessed with world-class players, but we had loads of different people who worked hard. You know, people like Graham Stewart that people forget about when he used to play on the left-hand side. Look at Matty Holland, Scotty Parker, Klaus Jensen. They were quite central players, but we had a system. And even Lisby, we had a system and we fit to it. And it was just one of those games that just really stood out. And Darren Pratley came on at the age of 18 for that game for the last 15 minutes. So it's talking how far back that is. Just in that 34, it's mad, isn't it? He was 18 when he came off the bench. I just remember it so well because they were a really good side. And I don't know if it was before or after that Jean Tigana. I think it might have been after, I'm not sure, but yeah, Chris Coleman was in charge. But yeah, I think for me, you've got wins like that at home, you definitely need to try and remember those ones instead of the big glory ones.
Yeah, and they became quite routine at a time, didn't they, Tom? I guess that, those home wins that you'd win against teams that were in Europe, they just felt like at the time they were almost normal. And obviously that was the season we had Scott Parker absolutely running the midfield, and came to was it Christmas that year he left, or was it the year after, I forget, but players that we had in our side like that, it's easy to forget how good a team we could have been. Now of course, one thing you do have to say is that season we ended up finishing only 3 points off fifth, where Newcastle got the final UEFA Cup spot. I think Middlesbrough got one as well for winning the League Cup, and they finished down in 11th or something, but that's up there with probably the closest we've come to tasting proper European football, and that has to be one of the major regrets you have from that Premier League era, is that we never quite got into Europe. When you look at some of the sides that have made it, like even bloody Wigan and Millwall got European runs from getting into the Cup, that's probably the major regret, that we never quite made it into Europe.
Yeah, always. I think you look at other teams like, Newcastle did it, Bolton did it. There were teams that you were able to watch on a Wednesday or a Thursday night who, you look at now and they're not the biggest. Well, you look at someone like Bolton, obviously they've dropped, but even teams like Newcastle who are still in the league, nowhere near that now, and you just think it's always going to be that question of what could have been, couldn't it really? Because it was that culmination of that Kerbishley era, and he'd taken his time, he'd built his squad year after year, and that was probably the pinnacle of it, and to get so close, and then it slowly started to slide away after that. And we always seemed to have those tough runs towards the end of the season, didn't we, that sort of they were just what we would describe as a curvishly season, you know, start well and end up like that. And yeah, that was as close as we ever got. Who's to say whether we'll ever get back there again, you know, the bigger the gap becomes now. So yeah, for younger fans, it might be hard to believe, but for us, it was just brilliant to see us up there.
Yeah, and Ben, just before we come on to your first game, I want to talk a bit more about Jonathan Johansson then, because obviously he was a player who got a brace in that game. At the time, I don't know, like with the likes of Johansson and Bartlett, the strikers we had, I don't know if we ever rated them quite as highly as we do now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say you're right. I think with that whole team, as Nath was just saying, we had players like Graham Stewart, like up front, as you're just saying, Bartlett, Johansson, yeah, Jason Yule, that maybe at the time, because I guess we took it all for granted.
Yeah.
As Tom was saying there, younger fans kind of look now at those victories, us winning to get to fourth in the table. I guess we all took it for granted. And I remember Sean Bartlett was such a great header of a ball. Johansson was a player that could play up front, but as well, Curbs liked to play him on the wing, and he was quite a pacey player. And some of the goals JJ scored, I mean, those bicycle kicks he was quite renowned for. I know he scored about 3 or 4 of them. But yeah, I think now we look back and we kind of think, do you know what? Yeah, like someone like Johansson, some of the goals he put in, and just his work rate as well. I think that epitomised a curvishly team around that time, that he could put these players in different positions. And someone like Johansson just never stopped running. I always remember that. And one of his main skills as well, I think at the start of his career for us, he was always on like the shoulder of a defender and would love a ball over the top, similar to like how Darren Bent played. And I remember at the start of his career, he scored quite a few like that, through on goals and landed past the keeper. But yeah, I think overall, I think we took it for granted. And now we're looking back at these games and thinking, do you know what? We had a really good side then.
Yeah, JJ, I think, scored also one of my favourite ever one-on-one finishes, which was in a 3-0 win or a win up at Middlesbrough, or a game definitely up at Middlesbrough. And he went through on the keeper and he just did this little dummy just before he sent the keeper the wrong way. It was an unbelievable finish. I have to try and dig it out. But right, let's go on to Ben's first game then. It's Fulham again, actually, at the Valley. Now, as I said at the top, unfortunately, not all of the games are going to have happy endings. This was Fulham visiting the Valley on the 27th of December, 2006.
Andrew sweeps this one in. Bocanegra is there with a header. Off the bar and turned in. Brian McBride in the right place to pick up the rebound from the Bocanegra header.
From Thomas.
And it's in from Ambrose. He's rattled it in off the inside of the post and Charlton are level.
Santini Amy will be absolutely gutted because this is a really poor pass.
Ben could get in here. He has done. The goal drought is over for Darren Bent.
Chris Coleman will be furious. A big clip down the field. Now deal with it, one of you. Kick each other. Do something. But do not pass it by. Do not leave it for each other. That is just what you don't do. You kids in a school playground do that, you'd be furious.
Alan Pardew could win as many as Reid managed in that short-lived reign. Unless Fulham frustrate him late on, and they could do here. And the strike from Kendra is in. And would you believe it? Fulham have bounced back. The third minute of stoppage time, and suddenly Alan Pardew's homecoming has been spoilt.
Well, there's huge down below us as to why this is a free kick. I mean, why on earth is that a free kick for Fulham? Why on earth is it given to them? I have no idea, Rob. No idea.
So there you go, Andy Gray. Not quite sure why Fulham got a free kick at the end there. Go on, Ben, it was your game. Tell us why you picked that one as one of your most memorable matches from the Premier League era.
Yeah, I think why I went for it is that was a number of games we've all come away from the Valley deflated. But I remember that. That's right up there for me, mainly because of that decision. The end, absolutely shocking. I actually watched it when you said about it. Trying to pick a few games last night, I searched for it on YouTube and found it, and it's absolutely bizarre.
It's like you to describe it. It's like the ball was going out towards the touchline on halfway. I think it was a lad we had for the Liverpool guy.
Traore.
I think it was Jimmy Traore possibly going for a challenge. And now, without trying to split the game down racial lines, Jimmy Traore quite clearly has a black hand. The Fulham player quite clearly had a white hand. It was a white hand that touched the ball, and somehow Fulham got given a free kick on the halfway line, which then got pumped into the mixer, and they equalised in the last minute, and thus took Pardew's debut win away from him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Thomas Radzinski. Just absolutely crazy. And I was just looking, the ref was Graham Powell, but it was, you can see him looking at Lino, flags for it straight away, waving his flag. I mean, we were all cheering, thinking, oh, it's a throw, we've done it, that's it. And he flags straight away, thinking, what is he seeing there? And yeah, it bounces down. And to be fair to Frank Quadru, he does finish it very well. But I mean, the game was quite surreal leading up to it. I think, as Tom was saying in his game previously, we had Les Reed in charge just before that, and it wasn't going very well with him. And I think we were obviously just waiting for a manager to come about. And didn't Kerbs go to West Ham?
Yeah, Pardew was sacked.
Pardew got sacked, and we got Pardew. And at the time, I think as a fan base, we were all quite happy with that appointment. And yeah, obviously it didn't work out too well in the end. But yeah, I think that game, I mean, how close were we to getting the 3 points? Absolutely robbed there. And yeah, I think Darren Bent scored a real striker's finish with those defenders. The ball come over the top, didn't they? And the two defenders thought, you're getting it. And Bent just nipped in, and great finish. Typical Darren Bent finish. And yeah, it felt like, you know what? Here we go. We've had a bad start to the season. Things may be on the up here. Pardew looks like a decent choice of manager. And yeah, got taken away from us so cruelly.
Yeah, Nathan, Nathan, it's easy to forget that when Pardew came in, because I think we then went on to beat Aston Villa a few days later with a last-minute winner, funnily enough, that there was a real uplifting spirits around the place when Pardew came in, and all of a sudden, like, we genuinely thought that he was going to be the impact manager that could keep us up.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously Pards was, he obviously had a stint at Charlton. Obviously, I know he had a stint with the Clowns down the road, but
scored the winner in my first ever Charlton game, Pardew.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's probably what, I mean, even now, if you look at it, like Powell and Bowyer, there's that sense of that they know what Charlton's about. And I mean, he had experience, obviously, being at West Ham. And I think at the time, I think he couldn't really, I mean, there could have been other names mooted about, but I think it was probably a good appointment for us, really. And it was just interesting to see, you know, how he would change it, how he'd use his experience. And like Ben said, it was obviously a gutting start for him. But I think even the performance itself, it just seemed like there was a bit of a spark, and that it needed some fresh ideas, and just needed a bit of, the players needed a bit of a kick up the bum, basically. And I think we got that. And so yeah, to obviously lose it to some of those names just ring back the memories, like Frank Quadru was a left back, wasn't he? Yeah, Brian McBride, Radzinski. It's just mad, really, all the old names kept popping about.
You've done a lot of reminiscing about Fulham so far, now.
I know. That's what I mean. I'm not even like, I've only met, I think, one other Fulham fan in my life. It's Dom. But I mean, apart from that, they had a good squad. And they were like, I mean, going back, I mean, they were one of the, I'm trying to think of like a team they would be like now. So they're not like, they had a bit of money, didn't they? Obviously, with Fired coming in. So I'm just trying, if you could compare them to a team now, would you say, what, like an Everton maybe, who's got a bit of money, but they've never really done much with it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I mean, if I could explain that to one of the younger lot of listeners, but that's what I'd probably say they are. But yeah, no, they had a good team. And but in terms of Pardew, I think at the time, I thought it was the right appointment.
Yeah, it's weird. I think everyone did at the time, but it clearly sort of went off the rails and then just accelerated. And then you hear all sorts of stories about the sort of bloke Pardew was behind the scenes. Right, I'm going to bring in my first game now. Takes us back to January 2005. Probably not one that too many will have a memory of, but it was very special to me. I think it's definitely the first, and I think it's possibly the only time I was ever present at a Charlton away game in the Premier League that we actually won.
That can't get the better of Weir this time. It's a poor ball from Hrydason. Falls nicely for Matt Holland. Oh, it falls very nicely for Matt Holland. It didn't look like the best of crosses in the world, but it certainly was good enough for Holland. Matt Holland scored the only goal of the match on Charlton's last away victory. That was at West Bromwich Albion shortly before Christmas. And he scored a goal there again, which could prove decisive.
So that was a Matt Holland volley at Goodison Park in January 2005. We won 1-0 at Everton. And like I said, off the top of my head, I think there's a good chance that's the only time I ever saw us win away in the Premier League. It's certainly one of a very few. Now, I don't know if any of you guys remember that match, Tom. I don't know if you have any memory of that match, so you might not be able to talk about the game specifically, but it was a wonder strike from Matt Holland. And for a player who always felt like he was fairly, you know, fairly tidy without ever being spectacular, he did actually have quite a few decent goals in his locker, Matt Holland, didn't he, Tom?
He was a brilliant player, yeah. And we'll go on to talk a little bit about the kind of Ipswich connection I've got in my family later with one of the games, but one of those players that came from them, so someone I knew a little bit about already. And he was just one of them players who also been on the international scene and scoring goals for Ireland as well. He was someone who, you know, I always, growing up being a Charlton fan, was around people who supported bigger clubs, and people didn't really know who Charlton were or knew them kind of as a Premier League team. But Matt Holland, and it sounds weird to say this, but he was one of those players that people actually knew because he was involved in international football as well. So yeah, he was a brilliant player. He reminded me a lot of Kinsella. I don't know whether those two would have ever overlapped. I'm not sure. But he was just one of those players that I really enjoyed watching in the middle. And like you say, primarily functional, but he always had a strike in him. And we've had midfielders like that over the time. You think back to Dale Stevens as well, who's, I would argue, a little bit more creative, but also had that strike on him. And, you know, Shelvey before that. We've always had players who've had the ability to do that, and Matt Holland was definitely the one for that generation, and he had a few decent goals in him.
Yeah, I remember a little chipped effort at home against Middlesbrough that was a good one. He also scored an absolute screamer away at Leeds. We played Leeds on the final day of the season once, drew 3-3, and he scored an absolute screamer. I think it's Matt Holland's birthday today, actually, as well. I think I saw that somewhere on Twitter, so happy birthday to Matt Holland. Right, let's go back to Tom then. Now, as I said earlier in the show, not all of them are happy endings. In fact, our one and only trip to the Emirates Stadium back in 2007 was a bit of a thumping.
Who can get their first World Cup? Percy surely pulled back. He was. A penalty kick and a red card. Thierry Henry back in the side, back with his penalty kick duties against Scott Carson, who concedes his first penalty kick of the season. And Arsenal and their captain are back in business. Henry looking for the return to the fullback, Justin Hoyt. Unlikely scorer, it's Justin Hoyt for Arsenal, who doubles their lead just before half-time. And it might just get better. Here's Thierry Henry. And another penalty kick. Suleiman Diawara with the foul. It's Robin van Persie, and that is unstoppable from the Dutchman. Arsenal finally get their third. Robin van Persie. Oh, lovely. A cheeky chip from Robin van Persie.
There we go, a 4-0 defeat at the Emirates Stadium. Again, in our relegation season back in 2007, Osei Sankofa was sent off in the opening stages as well. So, Tom, a bit of an unusual pick. Why don't you talk us through that one?
Yeah, sorry about that. going back to the El Kakouri chat, I remember getting to the Emirates and watching everyone warm up. And El Kakouri, all he was doing for his warm-up was just booting the ball miles in the air and then trying to control it when it came back down, rather than doing anything defensive. But I think I picked this one out. Yeah, exactly. I picked this one out again because, going back to the fact I didn't see that many games back then, I didn't see many of the big teams play Charlton, to be honest. Not live, anyway. So this was probably one of the few where I got to see what we call like a proper big side. And again, like Nath said about United, Arsenal were decent back then. So to go to the Emirates and see a stadium that size, you know, I think I was probably 16-ish, 17 back then. And to see players like Henry and Van Persie take to the field, it was just a real experience. You know, I probably hadn't been to that many away games as a Charlton fan. I'd done Ipswich and Norwich and some of the ones around Cambridge, but, you know, not massive games like an Arsenal. And it was just a real experience. Obviously, the result wasn't great, but also picking up on a point Benji made earlier about Pardew, I remember you could hear it, and I know the Emirates gets that reputation now as being quiet, but we were singing Pardew's name all game, even when we were 3-4-0 down. And he was clapping the fans back from right over the other side of the ground. And there really was a belief that Pardew was still going to get us out of it, even back then. And there was like that unity. And I know the season didn't work out how we wanted, and it was the start of what's been a very difficult time for the club. But there was just a real sense that it's that Charlton sense that despite what was happening on the pitch and the results not going our way, there was kind of that togetherness between the club and the fans. And I think that combined with as I say, you know, trying to be a bit more neutral about it and seeing some of those incredible Arsenal players, it was just a very memorable game for those reasons.
And that was a blast from the past, Benji. The name Suleiman Diawara, now he was one I forgot. I think he used to wear gloves pretty much all the time. Was that him? Do you remember much about that player?
Yeah, I was going to say that. He wore short sleeves and, like, they weren't even proper gloves. They, like, you know when players wear, like, night gloves? They were, like, these black, like, strap-on, weird gloves I remember he wore. But, yeah, I'll tell you what. I know fans were a bit miffed, weren't they, when Dowie came in. We seemed to give him quite a lot of money to spend. And Diawara was... I think he was the most expensive player in that summer. I actually quite liked him. I thought he was quite good. Obviously, he didn't have that great of a game. Well, I say he couldn't have much to do when you got 10 men and you're against Robin Van Persie, Henri, Fabregas and that. But I quite like Diawara. Obviously, his name works well with the He Hates Millwall song. Has obviously gone on for George Costa and a few others. But, out of the signings, I know we obviously signed Traore, Diawara, Hasselbank, didn't we, that year as well. I thought he was quite a decent defender, but we spent quite a bit of money on him and I don't think he stuck around for the season after. I think he was quickly sold, but I thought he was quite solid.
Yeah. Right, one more memory before we go for our break at half-time. And this one, again, a choice from Nathan. And again, I mean, it is a very memorable game, but very much for all the wrong reasons. This is Leeds United's visit to the Valley in April 2003.
And now Smith and Kuhl and Leeds are ahead.
Worked in for Smith, who's gone over Rufus. It's a Leeds penalty.
It is Ian Hart who scores.
And Viduka had a shot and scored terrifically well. And Leeds are turning the world on its head. 3-0 up before half-time. And this is the team that was heading down.
Here's Parker. He's gone over Radaby. And Charlton have a penalty. Jason Newell prepares to hit the spot kick. To give Charlton some hope. He has done just that. It's 3-1. And there's a minute to play before half-time.
Long Rufus. And feeding Viduka, who scores.
Renewed comfort for Leeds.
Smith.
Went over on the Youngster challenge, and it is another penalty to Leeds.
Viduka, fine!
Well, taken away from Alcalej by Kuhl. And Kuhl's gone for goal! The afternoon that transformed Leeds United's lives.
There you go, Nathan. A 6-1 home defeat against a relegation-threatened Leeds United side. I guess you don't really need to tell me why that one was so memorable.
But happy Easter, everyone, for that one. But, to be fair, there was, like you say, I mean, it was the worst game I've probably ever seen, especially at home. I mean, I know you've got like the Huddersfields away recent years, but there was a few reasons why I've picked that one. First off, I remember it was boiling, absolutely boiling, and we were stuck in traffic, and I think the game was like postponed by 15 minutes, I think, because of crowd congestion. And we were coming down the A2. My dad was dropping me and my two cousins to go watch the game. And my little cousin Dave and my older cousin Bobby. And he was, Dave weren't feeling out well anyway. Dave, we were stuck in traffic on the slip road on the A2, as if you're coming into the Rugby Way or wherever it is. And he was throw up outside the car, which was an experience. And
set the day up nicely.
So we won't rush to the ground, you know, got in there, stifling up. And then see us get thumped 6-1, which was. Growing up, I mean, Harry, obviously, he wasn't, you know, world class. It's not like Lionel or Messi, but Harry Kuhl for me was probably one of my idols. I watched when I was younger. And I was obviously a lot slimmer and a lot quicker. I used to play left midfield, so I used to base my sort of game around Harry Kewell. And I just remember Peter Reid was in charge, and I think he was like caretaker manager or something. And like they were saying, they were like, they hadn't won away since Boxing Day. So I was going to the game against, you know, a good, you know, a big club like Leeds, thinking, you know, should win this one today, you know, hopefully. And then they absolutely pasted us. I just remember, yeah, so you know, you had Harry Kewell, Danny Mills played, Ian Hart, Alan Smith, Aduka was an absolute beast. Yeah, James Milner made a sub app at the age of 18. So another one for the kids as well. He was 18 when I saw him. It's mad how you think of it now, and he's still going at Liverpool. It's insane. But yeah, it wasn't a great day for watching them. But I think sometimes as a football fan, even though you might be on the other end of a pacing, if you're getting beat by a good team, and they were a good side.
They were relegation. That's the bizarre thing. They were relegation threatened that year, and they ended up going down the next year, despite the fact they had all these quality players throughout their team. I think they'd only a few years before been in the Champions League semi-finals. It was crazy how a big club like Leeds would fall, but then just save their one massive pasting for us.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like you say, there was a Champions League. You know, Bowes scored a blooming screamer against Milan, wasn't it? Or Juve? I can't remember which one it was. I think it was AC Milan. And like they were in the Champions League, but I think Bowes has touched on it before in terms of how it was run off the pitch. I mean, money was getting thrown everywhere, and so yeah, I mean, that for me, I mean, just looking at the team, I mean, I looked last night, I looked at the starting lineup for Leeds, and I was looking at it going, wow, like how on earth can you, you know, it's, I mean, you could say it's something similar, maybe like Spurs, sort of, you know, Spurs fighting relegation or something like that. Now they were a big team, and but yeah, even though we got absolutely pasted, it was the first game I come away, and I was just like, I don't think I'd ever see us like get pasted at home, and I don't think we've been pasted at home since. Well, definitely not that bad.
I remember a 4-0 defeat against Brighton in League One. I'm sure there's many more than that as well. But
was that New Year's Day, that one?
Oh, I can't remember, but yeah.
Is that the one where Kishishev played?
Yeah, I remember Kishishev playing for them.
He played for Brighton, didn't he?
Yeah, but yeah, so yeah, we have had some pastings, but yeah, that Leeds one. I remember sitting in that stadium, I used to say, it was a boiling day, and because we were getting so heavily pumped, all the seats emptied out pretty quickly, but I remember we stayed to the end, and you're able to sit across rows upon rows of seats, and after a while, it just became sort of funny. Just seeing your team just get absolutely trounced at home by a team that was relegation threatened, as Leeds United were at the time. Right, we've reached the halfway point of our own Pride and Premiership memories. We'll have a quick break here on Charlton Live, and we'll be back in 30 seconds.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Charlie.
Yes!
Oh, it's
in!
Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You're absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
So welcome back. This is Charlton Live, the our podcast, one of our social isolation busting podcasts. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Our own memories, an alternative look at some of our favourite memories from Charlton's Premier League era. Don't forget, the club are running the Pride and Premiership DVD for free on Valley Pass and on YouTube this weekend. So make sure you sit down and have a watch of that as well and look at the top 20 Premier League games. We're looking at a different list. We're looking at our favourite memories, but avoiding the best ones. Try and bring you something slightly different to look at. Right, we're on to Ben's second choice. Now, this is one of my favourites as well. A trip to the Stadium of Light in February 2003.
In by Jensen. Fish. Fortune went up. Mark Fish. Deflected it in. And that sums up Sunderland's luck right now. Not just one deflection, but two. Stephen Wright, the unluckiest man of all. Mark Fish had two bites at it. It hit not one, but two Sunderland players. First off Flo, and then off the right heel of Stephen Wright. No way can Fish claim that. Has to go down as a Stephen Wright own goal.
Kevin Lisby,
Scott Parker, Chris Powell. This is good play by Charlton. Oh, it's another own goal! Michael Proctor! Twice in 3 minutes! This really is the Stadium of Fright.
Jensen to take.
Oh, it's got it again! It's another own goal! Michael Proctor for a second time. Three own goals in the space of 7 minutes. Proctor seemed to turn his back on the ball as it came in from Jensen's corner and wasn't actually looking at it as it struck him on the back and beat the hapless Sorensen.
So there we go, Ben. Three own goals in 7 minutes. Again, I think that one doesn't require too much explanation, but I mean, it was bloody funny at the time. And it's Sunderland must absolutely hate us as a football club because we mug them off all the time.
That's what I was thinking. I thought about the game and I thought, oh, yeah, it's against Sunderland. poor Faz, but as we know, they are good losers. But
yeah, clearly. You're dishing out three own goals.
Yeah. On the video footage, I mean, the second own goal that poor chap Proctor scores, I'll tell you, he looks like he's about to cry when he scores that one. He just walks straight to the centre circle with his head down. But they also pan footage to the fans and half of them are leaving. Yeah. I just looked, there was like over 30-odd, 35,000 of them there that day as well. And like, blimmin' heck, that was a... And they had Howard Wilkinson as manager. It just wasn't going well for him. That first goal took two deflections. Mark Fish celebrated as if it was the best goal he'd ever scored.
Probably was, to be fair.
And did a big belly flop in front of the our bench. And then, I was just watching the highlights of it last night. And the second goal that was scored, Chris Powell was like through on the left, he shoots, the keeper saves it, and then it deflects onto Proctor as he's running back. I mean, he couldn't do nothing about that goal, but the third goal, we just cross it in, and he turns his back on it. He just had a complete mate. He turns his back on it and hits his back from the corner and goes in. I mean, personally, I wasn't at the game. I'm cheating a little bit with this one. I wasn't there, but I remember vividly sitting there at Soccer Saturday, all ready to go. And one of those games that, I tell you what, I wish you could go back and watch old Soccer Saturday shows.
Yeah.
And I just remember Jeff Stelling there and the other pundits just wetting themselves laughing. They couldn't quite believe it. Because it was in the space of 8 minutes.
Yeah, oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, it's a Sunderland side that absolutely capitulated that season. You won't be surprised to find out they were relegated at the end of that season with only 19 points, which isn't many more than Derby's record. What did Derby get when they went down? About 12 or something? But, I mean, Sunderland were absolutely atrocious that season. I remember I wasn't there either. I remember I was listening to the game, I think, at home, and we'd gone 1-0 up, and I thought, actually, I'm going to take a stroll up the road and go and get some chocolate from the corner shop or something. And in between leaving the house and fiddling with my little portable radio, trying to get my headphones in, and I managed to get the headphones in. I could hear, you could tell from the way the commentator was speaking that they were disappointed, but I just assumed it because we were still 1-0 up. And then the halftime whistle went, and he went, right, that's half time then. Sunderland 0, Charlton 3. And I was like, what? What has happened here? I mean, Nathan, obviously we mentioned Mark Fish there. Now, again, I know sometimes we get a bit misty-eyed about players from the past, especially the Premier League era, but in my memory, wasn't Mark Fish actually quite rubbish?
From my memory, yes. To be fair, I mean, the best... I mean, listen, you know, I don't know the guy, but the best thing he ever done is, I don't know if any of you two, any of you boys remember, is when him and Bartlett come in, they used to do the South African warm-up.
Yeah, the two lines.
And honestly, if not, I'm trying to explain it. You had two lines, and it looked like they were doing a funky chicken dance, literally, before the match. Honest to God, I'm telling you.
They waved their arms big, didn't they?
Yeah. If anyone has a video of it, like, send it in, because I ain't seen it in years. I used to be infatuated with it. Every time they done it, I used to sit there in the stand, just watch it.
Yeah, we used to all clap along, didn't we, when they used to do the clapping arms bit.
But I mean, Mark Fish, he'd done the job at some points, but I was just saying just earlier, I mean, I remember there was a game against West Brom another time. I think we might have been, I don't know if we were 3-0 down at half time, I don't know, but it was against West Brom, and Robbie Earnshaw, the one who'd done the old backflips, he was rapid, he was a good player for Wales International, wasn't he? But I remember he actually made Mark Fish look so bad that I could be wrong, but it might have been the only time where Kerbs like dragged someone off at half time for being that rubbish. but no, that game he was bad. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, he had a good pedigree and stuff. I mean, with Fishy, and then I think he got mainly got contract deals because everyone could do the fish thing on the big screen. So,
yeah,
it was good memories of Fishy though.
Yeah,
and didn't he break his foot or smash his foot by kicking the the dining room table?
Well, no, wasn't he the one who like gave himself quite a nasty injury by falling backwards through a glass table or something? Yeah, there you go, like a fish out of water. Right, let's go on to my next memory, my second game. Now, like Ben, I'm cheating a bit. I wasn't at this game. But again, I'll tell you why when we come back, why I have very good memories of this one. This was a visit again to Elland Road to play Leeds back in December 2002.
Picking up now, Kewell's on his way here. He's got a man left. It's Kewell. He's going to go for goal. Is he going to go for goal or what? Terrific stuff from the Australian.
It'll be Rowett's ball up here. Dewberry has to take care of this. It's dropped in. Great chance here. Lisby! Equaliser! Charlton level with Kevin Lisby's first goal of the season, and Terry Venable shrugs his shoulders, puts his hands on his hips and wonders how on earth he's going to get a victory at the moment. Kevin Lisby has struck a dagger into the hearts of Leeds United. He had all the time in the world, and he bounced his shot wide of Paul Robinson. Here it is, down into the ground, wide of the flailing arm of the Leeds United goalkeper, and it's Leeds 1.
Kewell loses the possession. Parker forward. This is Charlton's opportunity. Still Parker. Can he finish? He can! Would you believe it? Would you believe it? Terry Venable slumps to his seat, and Scott Parker may have won the day for Charlton Athletic here against a distraught Leeds United, who simply cannot believe what is happening to them in life right now. Parker took the ball on beyond Woodgate, slipped it wide of Robinson, but you have to say the challenges were futile, and Scott Parker has perhaps won a famous victory at Elland Road for Charlton Athletic.
So there we go. That's my second pick, and again, it's a last minute winner. Scott Parker up at Leeds, and again, one of the reasons why this was so special for me, very similar to the Blackburn game that Tom picked earlier on, was basically I was out from one of my brother's birthdays, like having lunch somewhere, and one of my other brothers texted us saying it'd finished 1-1. So as far as we knew, the game had finished 1-1. And then we went home, and this was a Sunday game. I think, I don't know if Leeds had been in Europe, or for whatever reason, it was on a Sunday. And they put the highlights on ITV when they used to have the highlights of the Premiership show on ITV about 6 o'clock. So we got in just in time to watch it. Thought, oh, we'll watch our goal, see our equaliser. Then afterwards, they just show Parker pick up the ball and run and put it into the bottom corner. So we actually got to celebrate it as if it was real time, because we had no idea that we actually won the game. And then Scott Parker scored that winner against a Leeds side that were in all sorts of trouble. And as you could hear there, Terry Venables was the manager. And I felt you feel sorry for old Eltel there, because he was, I imagine he wasn't sacked too long after that game. But I mean, great memories. And I guess, Tom, we have to talk about Scott Parker again, because, I mean, that was one of his all-time great individual goals. He scored a couple like that, as well as some long rangers. And it does hurt you to say sometimes, but he was, I think he was the best player I've ever seen in a Charlton shirt.
He's definitely got to be up there, yeah. And I've spoken to Terry about this before. I'm a little bit too young to kind of understand the politics behind the move and the anger that people had when he left. I get it now, but at the time when I saw him go and Abramovich had come in with all that money at Chelsea, to me it made sense. You know, you lose your best players to big teams, and looking back now, or if one of our best players now did that, I would probably be in agreement with a lot of people. But at the time it was just like, fair enough, off he goes. And looking back, I wonder if he thinks whether he made that move too soon or not. I mean, I know his Chelsea career didn't work out, but what he went on to do in terms of playing at other big clubs and captaining some big clubs and getting a chance at England, you know, I'm sure he's going to look back and think he had a pretty decent career. But yeah, I just remember he was, as you just said there, one of those players that, and I think Shelvey was the same, although he probably wasn't at his peak when he was at us. He was just one of those players that could just do things on the pitch that the rest of the Charlton players just couldn't do. And yeah, he was a joy to watch down at the Valley.
Yeah, and another name that was mentioned there, Ben, was Kevin Lisby. Now, I started watching this Pride and Premiership DVD the other day, just when Ollie said they were going to put it on, I thought I'd watch it and see what ideas we can pick up. But I was surprised by quite how often Kevin Lisby came up in that DVD. You forget how big a part perhaps that he played in our Premier League era, especially the first half of it, because, I mean, again, he was one of those players that had so much potential and sort of flattered to deceive at times. But he did have his moments, Kevin, and of course a good equaliser there at Elland Road that day.
Yeah, I think as we spoke about earlier when we were talking about Johansson, we had strikers that came in like Johansson, like Yule, like Svensson as such in those Premier League years. But Kev was one of those strikers that came through our academy, and with regards to players coming through our academy, we haven't had many strikers that have come through and have actually gone on to do better things. With Lisby, as you say, he did pop up with some important goals in some big games. I remember being at Stamford Bridge when he scored a last-minute goal there. And I also remember being at Ipswich where he scored a last-minute goal there. That was a boiling afternoon.
That was an absolute worldie, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first away game of the season. And yeah, that was a screamer. So I think he'll probably be beating himself up more than anything else, rather than our fans giving him stick, because you could see he had that potential there in him. He scored some great goals. Obviously, the best one he'll be known for is that hat-trick goal against Liverpool. And he just never went on to do it, did he, Lisby? But he had it about him, and I think he did well in the lower leagues, didn't he? And I know he did well for Leighton Orient, and he became quite a legend there. But yeah, it's a shame, really. But I guess there were a lot of other strikers around at the time that kind of were more favourable at the time. But yeah, he had it in him. I think supporters gave him a bit too much stick, but maybe that's because he came through our academy and we were hoping for more from him, because he did show a lot of potential at times. But yeah, he did come up with some big goals, to be fair to him.
Yeah, right, let's go then into our last round of games. This is Tom's final pick, and well, a team that is got a lot of local ties to him. Ipswich Town visited the Valley on New Year's Day in 2002.
Ryerson gets up. That'll come to Marcus Bentz. And Ipswich lead inside a minute at the Valley. Gilton, oh, it's an excellent through ball. And it's set. Bentz away, and Kearney's committed. And Marcus Bentz doubles Ipswich's lead. And we have played just 5 minutes. Luke Young, testing throw. It's come down to Robinson, and Sereni can't deal with it. And Charlton have pegged back their lead. John Robinson with the goal. Charlton with a free kick, which we take from by Luke Young. We'll flick on from Fish. There's Parker. Well, Venus cleared it off the line.
the referee and linesman decides it had crossed the line. No doubt among the officials that Scott Parker has scored, and Charlton have levelled it up at 2-2. Super build-up play. Robinson with an opportunity to provide the cross. Lisby's header, and it comes to Yule, and that will do nicely for Jason Yule. Suddenly, Charlton find themselves in front. Two down inside 5 minutes. A stunning comeback, and they lead at the Valley by 3-2.
So there we go, Tom. Well, a comeback victory against Ipswich, and for a team, obviously, your family has got very close ties with. That must have been a very special afternoon for you.
Yeah, really special. And it was my 12th birthday that day. So when we drew Ipswich on my birthday, which I think we've done a lot over the years, I was bugging my parents every day to get tickets for my birthday. And it wasn't until the morning of New Year's Day I woke up and had my presents and my cards, and there were the tickets in one of the cards, and found out I actually was going. Even in New Year's Eve, they were kidding on that we hadn't got tickets. But when we got to the ground that day, we were split. So my grandma and my mum were in the Charlton half of the Jimmy Seed stand, but me and my sister and my dad and my granddad were in the Ipswich half. So 10 minutes in, we're 2-0 down. I'm in tears, wishing I hadn't gone. And it was just the worst birthday ever. And then I'll never forget every one of the Charlton goals that went in. My sister was jumping up, turning round, celebrating like mad amongst all these Ipswich fans. Lucky it was only Ipswich. But to then go on and win, as you say, with the ties I've got with my family, with it being a birthday, with it being 2-0 down from the start, it was just a very special day for me. And I always treasure those games. As I say, the first game I ever went to was Charlton Ipswich with my granddad. He's an Ipswich fan, although he's kind of converted a little bit since Wembley. But just a real special kind of family occasion for me, and something that football's always been about since I started coming.
Now, one bit that didn't make the highlight clips there, but I remember it so vividly, and then saw it again when I went through watching the video to record the highlights, Nathan, was George Costa had his only ever goal in that game, but it was disallowed, so he never actually scored for Charlton. But we got to talk about George Costa, the tank. Portuguese defender who signed on loan from Porto, if I remember rightly, for the second half of that season. I mean, that's when we knew we'd arrived in the Premier League, when we had a player of his calibre turning out for us week by week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. It's a shame, really, because I remember. Do you know what? It's weird because if I think back to it, I mean, watching George play, which I think might have been 2002. Maybe, I'm not sure.
Yeah, 2002, when he came in, end of that season.
Yeah. So I was, year 10, so I was about 15, 16. It was the first time I remember looking at, it sounds a bit boring, but, you know, when you watch football, everyone's in, you know, the exciting forward thinking, the attacking element. He was the first player I remember looking at and appreciated how good an art defending was. And I mean, he was only there for a short period, like you say, but he stood above everyone. And I mean, he read the game. He was just unreal. And he was, like you say, he was an absolute machine. And you could tell he come from a good pedigree from Porto. That era, I mean, I think it was the same. Gary Rowett was there as well, but he got a bad injury. I don't know if it was due to that when George come in. But, yeah, I mean, trying to think of how I can explain it to people that who never see him play, I would say it's like you being... I mean, because he wasn't, like, really, really well-known, was he? But he had the European-wide, he had the reputation. But in England, it was like, oh, yeah, he's quite a good player. But he was unbelievable. And I don't think I remember him losing many battles. And then you had some good forwards in them days as well in the Premier League. And, he was an unreal defender. And he went on to have a good coaching career as well, was through Porto and the Olympics and stuff like that. So... He was a great little defender.
Thanks.
He wasn't little. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, he had the nickname The Tank, didn't he? Right, let's go into Nathan's final game then. So this is a trip up to the Stadium of Light again. This one comes in August 2005.
Murphy got his foot in. Ambrose, no offside here. Darren Benford, Charlton, the angle's disappearing. Needs help. Murphy's there. It's Benton, he scored. Took his time, picked his moment, and found the back of the net. It's a debut goal for Charlton's Darren Bent. Welsh has done well. Oh, magnificent save, but the rebound's in.
it's a red card. Ambrose is sent.
Will it be Haraldsson with a left-footed hammer or Murphy with a right-footed curler? It's Murphy. Oh, what a goal! Aren't too many better free kick takers around than Danny Murphy. Ryan Hughes away, and Bent will chase this. Caldwell is back. It's Bent, and it's three. What a super finish from Darren Bent. Brian Hughes it was with the clearance. Only Bent and Caldwell were up there. Bent had no help and needed no help.
Yeah, so there we go. Darren Bent absolutely bursting onto the scene. His first Premier League appearance for Charlton. His debut, of course, with two goals. And that was an opening day of the season, Nath. And I mean, it was the sort of opening day that fills you with a lot of hope.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's exactly why I picked it, mate. I mean, like we said, we haven't picked the like the Arsenal, the Spurs, and the Chelseas and that. But I mean, if you looked at that, the whole performance all round, you know, it was a great performance, and it was a moment. Even though, like you said, it was the first game of the season, when you looked at the team and how it was set up, I started sitting up thinking, well, we could do something here, do you know what I mean? But, I mean, in the summer we signed Bents, both of them, I think we signed both of them in that season. So I think Powell came in, didn't he? Did Chris Powell come in that season? Ambrose, and then the unsung hero, which I think he was at the club the other day, wasn't he, Alexis Merton? We got him on loan from Chelsea, another brilliant player. And I mean, that middle, we had, obviously, as the highlights said, you know, Bent scored an early debut goal from, obviously, Ambrose, and then Ambrose got sent off on his debut. Murphy putting a trademark free kick, like his first ever free kick he scored for Liverpool and Man United and that sort of stuff. But, I mean, just on that day, I remember you had, the thing is you had Murphy and Smerton in the middle, and then you had a converted Radoslav Kishishev in that sort of, that anchor role, which, when he first came in under Kerbs, he played at right back, and I must admit, I didn't really rate him. He just seemed a bit off the pace. He seemed to get beaten. He was exposed a lot, and I found him quite a bit of a passenger. He wasn't offering much going forward. And then the Kerbs sort of put him in the middle, and he was like, he had a new lease of life. You know, he was like, how can I explain? He was like a little Jack Russell, wasn't he? He was always nipping at your heel, and then towards the end of his career, which when he came, well, I said earlier, when he came back with Brighton, he got a standing ovation because he put so much effort in, and he was one of those 100%ers. But I mean, he was just energetic, and then you had people like Murphy, who got set pieces, and his technical ability, Smerton, you know, clever, dictated tempos of the games. What Smerton used to do is he used to do the ugly stuff, keep it simple, and give it to the people like the Murphys and the Ambroses to go and, you know, with their craftsmanship and try and do stuff on the ball. But I mean, that's for me. I mean, that's why. I mean, and that season, I think it was that season, is where Murphy was in. I think he was in the top three in terms of assists and key passes, and he ended up going to Spurs.
Yeah, in the January transfer window as well. Wasn't it? It's another one of those ones where it went right down to the wire. But unfortunately, Danny Murphy left, and it was that season, was it? Bent's first season. We started off so well. I think we were second around like October still or something ridiculous. We ended up finishing 13th. Kerbishley would go on to leave at the end of that season, and we'd go on to get relegated the next year. Right, let's get Ben's last one. This was when Ben mentioned it, and it was only when he mentioned it that it reminded me of it, but I remember this being a real fun game. Like, that's certainly a real fun end to the game when Everton visited the Valley towards the end of December 2004.
Swept in by Murphy. Ryerson lost out. And Charlton have taken the lead. It's Talal El-Khoury. It's a straight red card. And it's a straight red card for Duncan Ferguson.
It's a long throw here. Ferguson being held, but the elbow there, right in the face of Haraldsson, who goes straight down. And the referee, Mike Riley, gets that spot on.
Swept in by Murphy. And they've got a second goal. It's Herman Haraldsson.
Danny Murphy's corner, not dealt with properly. Headed out, Haraldsson at the back post. Let's fly with that left foot. Keeps it down well, adjusts his body well. And beats Tony Hibbett at that back post.
So there we go. Two goals in the final 10 minutes and a red card for Duncan Disorderly Ferguson there. Benji, why was that on your list as well?
I guess it goes down to what Nath was saying. Like, we remember the Arsenal, the Chelsea, the Tottenham games that we as an underdog team going against the odds, winning those games, and they, of course, get the plaudits. But at the time, I read the report, Everton were going for second place that day. If they would have beaten us, they would have gone second. And obviously, we're talking about late December. It's 28th of December, that game. But we ourselves, I can't remember where we were. We were definitely fifth or sixth around that spot at the time. And going into it, they hadn't lost in eight. And we were in good form ourselves, but yeah, it was a big game, and I remember the atmosphere just being electric, and especially when we went 1-0 up from Tom's favourite player there, Mr. El Kakouri. And that, I just watched the goals back before we came on, and a great ball across from Konchesky for the goal. He really had a good left foot on him, and as you said, Mr. Duncan Disorderly. I was, my old season ticket was 9 rows back from Curbs' dugout, and literally he'd only been on the pitch, Ferguson, for 9 minutes, and we know what kind of player Hrydason was for us. He was a real fans' favourite. He gave it 100%, and I don't think you'd want to come up against him. He was a real ferocious character, wasn't he? So I think he'd got into Ferguson's skin, was winding him up a bit, and then... it was terrible what Ferguson did. He literally just full-arm elbow, bang, right into Hrydason's face.
And that's why it felt like justice was served when Hrydason then got the second goal a couple of minutes later and did that superb celebration, just a forward roly-poly.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. I remember, I don't know if anyone else will be able to remember, but in the programme before that game, there was something about a column, it might have been from a fan, saying our celebrations these days are a bit like light-hearted and aren't that great. I remember El Kakouri always used to do the arms out kind of celebration and run over. But for his goal, he did that, but then ran round loads when he did it. And then Hrydason scored, and then obviously did that front kind of flip that was in slow motion. This is really slow. But that was a fantastic finish by Hrydason. He just squeezed it in at the far post. Great volley. And and as the boys have said about similar games, that kind of felt like, here we go. The season before we finished seventh and we kind of just missed out. But that season, if we just beat Everton, who were in great form themselves, and we thought, oh, here we go, this could be it. And that was one of my favourite ever days down the valley. That was a great atmosphere. And watching Ferguson get sent off after being on the pitch for 9 minutes was quite funny as well.
Yeah, right. So let's go into our final Pride and Premiership alternative list. My final pick. This was at the Valley again. 2001, Leicester came to the Valley, and we saw one of the most bizarre incidents we've ever seen in Charlton's Premier League era.
The home win against struggling Leicester City was anything but straightforward. Steve Brown's first half handball was deliberate, according to referee Mike Dean, despite his ankle giving way in an awkward fall. The red card delivered to the stricken Brown incensed the crowd. And Superstore merchandising catalogues then rained down in demonstration from all sides of the valley. Leicester's players saw the funny side, but things would get worse for them as Charlton's management helped to clear up the mess. Numerical advantage wasn't to be Leicester's for long, as Junior Lewis clashed with Jonathan Johansson. Hardly X-rated stuff, and definitely a case of evening things up. Peter Taylor was flabbergasted. His job was on the line. Charlton strikers put him out of his misery.
Bartlett wins the header. Powell is onto it. He's got around Marshall and delivered a fantastic cross, onto which is Jonathan Johansson to establish a lead for Charlton Athletic. Here's Johansson. And there's Bartlett. 2-0 Charlton. Sean Bartlett slithering in at the back post.
And you would think taking the home side out of reach of hapless Leicester.
So there we go, a 2-0 win over Leicester City quite early on in that season. It was in September 2001. I'm fairly confident Peter Taylor was sacked pretty soon after that as well. So another manager given the old heave-ho by Charlton, but of course remembered for the bizarre incident where, and whoever was in charge of marketing at the time must have been gutted because they spent all this money. And, you know, this is before the internet, I guess, was widely available, and still a lot of advertising was done, you know, in catalogues and via paper. And they'd printed off all these catalogues for the club shop and stuck them on every single seat. And then Steve Brown was sent off by Mike Dean. I believe that was Mike Dean's first ever red card in the Premier League. And everyone decided that he shouldn't have been sent off because, according to Steve Brown at the time, he was seriously injured. He was sent off after falling over. He got stretchered off. And as they lifted up the stretcher, Mike Dean showed the red card for the deliberate handball just outside the area. On came all the brochures. They were thrown on. It was really funny. I remember I was in the Jimmy Seed stand in the Charlton half of it, and I think it was Ian Walker would have been the Leicester City goalkeeper picking up a copy and leaning against the post and sort of reading it and nodding his head, sort of taking the mick a bit, but really funny. And then obviously I think Junior, whatever his name was, got sent off for Leicester, which was never a red card. But it was, you know, it was a feisty game. We ended up winning it by 2-0. Now, the funniest part about that is, of course, if anyone's ever heard Steve Brown talk about that incident, is he now can admit that he was just faking it. He wasn't injured at all. He went down. He was just thought if he stayed lying down on the pitch for long enough, maybe the referee would give him a bit of leeway and only book him if he was being stretched off. But no, he got sent off, and then the physio forced him to wear a boot for the rest of the night, even though Brownie knew that was absolutely nothing wrong with him. So there, that was one of my favourite guys. Were any of you guys there throwing stuff on the pitch? Because I remember at the time my dad wouldn't let us throw our books on. Did anyone throw their one on?
Yeah, I didn't throw mine. I was in West Lower, so one came over the top. So I said to my dad, oh, can I throw this one? And I just loved that one, but I kept my one.
Yeah. Nathan, did you throw your one then?
Oh, 100% I did. 100%. I was with my cousin Bobby, and I remember it vividly. And it was just like, because back in the day, you used to have, I don't know if it was the season ticket book that was yellow. I don't know if it was that season, but you used to have... Yeah, listen, kids, you didn't have none of this card business. You had to rip out a bit of paper and give it to people, yeah, that's how it used to work. But I remember we were thinking this, I should chuck this out, and my cousin was like, no, you won't be able to get back in. So it's just like you said, that was one of the weirdest situations, because then everyone was going mad, thinking, oh, you know, that's really nasty of you, Mr. Dean, isn't it? But yeah, no, it was a bit of a surreal experience. But obviously, we've seen loads of things go on pitches now anyway, haven't we? So we're probably used to it down the valley now.
There was a forerunner for all the protests that would come many, many years later. Right, look, I think we've come to the end of this week's Charlton Live pod, our own alternative Pride and Premiership DVD version of our favourite games from the Premier League era. Just trying to steer clear of some of the more obvious ones. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you to Tom, to Nathan and to Benji for joining me on the pod this week and sharing your favourite Premier League memories.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, Louis.
I've been Louis Mendes. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. We're going to try again something slightly different next week is currently the plan. We'll let you know a bit more next weekend. But I hope you've enjoyed this week's pod. I've been Louis Mendes. Thank you for listening all the way through to the end. And we shall speak to you again next week. We'll see you later.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.